Next on BYUSN, the transfer portal giveth and taketh away. We react to the latest movement in the portal for BYU and discuss which position groups are the Cougars' biggest needs. Former BYU quarterback Riley Nelson joins us to discuss how aggressive BYU should be in the portal, and he looks ahead to the Cougars and Colorado in the bowl game.
Heptathlete school record holder Ben Barton's in the house to talk about his record-breaking performance despite being sick. And Top 5 Tuesday features the best plays from BYU's win over Colorado in the 1988 Freedom Bowl.
Welcome to BYU Sports Nation Freedom! Presented by the BYU Store, official
outfitter. They may take our lives!
BYU fans everywhere. Tuesday, December 17th, I am Spencer Linton, alongside a man who enjoys a good morning session of pickup ball, Jerem Jordan.
I can't play late at night because I stay up too late, so I got to play in the morning, and that's how old I am, right? This morning at the Annex, there's a pickup group with select individuals. You and I aren't getting this invite. Let's just say that. Dwayne Wade showed up. It's the Ryan Smith plays in this group. I know Craig Cusick's in this group.
I'm sorry, what?
Was there. Dwayne Wade was in the Annex playing pickup this morning. Ryan Smith, BYU super fan, owner of the Utah Jazz, Utah Hockey Club, and every other sports franchise in this state, tweeted the following. Morning ball is different when Flash shows up at Dwayne Wade.
Just a little bit. What's Dwayne Wade's version of Uncle Drew? Kyrie Irving, when he dresses up as a grandpa's Uncle Drew. Yeah. So Dwayne Wade needs a version of that.
I was going to say Uncle Charles, but there's Charles Boone in that photo. Yeah. No, that's fun.
Yeah, how you feel if you're Charles? Yo, Charles, you got that guy.
You got Dwayne? Sure.
Okay.
It's like, you guys both played pro? Well, yeah.
One of you has an interesting statue outside of the Miami Heat arena.
You both,
the other doesn't.
Right? You both played for your national teams, Cote d'Ivoire and the United States. This is even, right?
Very cool. The connections to BYU through Ryan Smith and everyone else.
Dwayne Wade is a minority governor with the Utah Jazz.
I love it.
Since the connection.
I love it. So he's in Provo. He's in Provo playing pickleball this morning.
He's in Provo more often than you think.
Yeah.
He plays at Riverside Country Club.
That's great. That's great stuff. All rise and shout.
We ain't getting that in right.
It's time for What's Trending.
They have a bunch of very good players. Like, this is one of the greatest teams that BYU's ever had.
To end the season at 10-2.
Jake Retzlaff has had a fantastic season. Nobody expected either team to be where they are.
BYU could have some good studs going into the next year.
What's Trending presented by BYU Food to Go, the MVP of your next event. I know D-Wade's a basketball guy, but he appreciates some good football, and BYU played a lot of good football this year.
Marquette, great for what?
Nope. The transfer portal has given and taken away from BYU in the last 24 hours. Specifically, yesterday, BYU redshirt sophomore linebacker Ice Moa entering the portal. But BYU picks up a commitment from a tight end from the team up north. We can't say his name. You know the drill until it's official with BYU. But if you've seen it on social media, then congratulations.
AJ DiBonsa.
You know the name of said tight end. So, Jerem, looking at those two positions, linebacker lost, tight end gained. How do you feel about the net gain loss of those two individuals and how it impacts BYU?
Yeah, bummer to miss out on Ice. And this is part of the deal with young backers. You may redshirt that first year. You may not play that second year. It's hard to be patient. Not sure what all the conversations were relative to what he wants, what the staff needs, and so on and so forth. So, yeah, just on the surface, bummer, because here's a talented kid who's going to make an impact elsewhere. I wish it was BYU. As for the tight end, this is a kid out of Orem who played at American Fork, who was the number three tight end in the country coming out of high school. Hasn't put up huge numbers in 2 years at UCLA and then one at Utah, but, hey, 29 games played, 29 catches, 400 yards, 4 touchdowns. Hopefully BYU can find this guy at tight end a little more, because there is this perception out there that BYU doesn't use the tight end a ton. I hope that BYU can get back to that. Why they have it, I don't know if that has to do with the players themselves or the scheme or the play. I don't know. But I'm just hoping that in the future they can. Because this year I expected Keanu Hill to be a way bigger part of the offense. He was not. Had some notable moments, but I thought he would factor into how the season went. Did not.
We both
much.
Did.
It was disappointing a little bit, I suppose. Ultimately, BYU goes 10-2, so I'm not sure how disappointing that is. But, yeah, it's hopefully a situation where BYU can get back in the tight end business, and certainly they've got a guy who is looking for an opportunity to make a splash in 1 year and then perhaps go to the NFL.
This unnamed tight end had 10 catches and one touchdown for the team up north last season.
Had a catch against BYU.
Indeed, he did. I was just going to point that out. He was involved against BYU. So if you need a little more context to find out who it is, well, then I don't know what else to
hopefully
do.
Hopefully he can keep the hair. Yeah. I don't think so, but hopefully.
Somebody said, how many retweets to keep the hair?
At Tom Homo.
Yeah. I love it.
I think it was Jeff Hansen.
BYU needs some help in the tight end room. No doubt about
it.
You lose stud in Reiner Swanson. He goes on his mission. Matavitase graduating. Yep. Jackson Bowers is in the transfer portal. And then Ethan Erickson had season-ending surgery, and he's out until who knows when. And who knows if Ethan, we hope he'll be okay, but
it was the same injury that Connor Pay had, by the way. So he'll be back for spring, I would anticipate.
Great. Yeah. So Ethan's a great athlete. He's a good player, but BYU desperately needs some depth in the tight end room.
Did he catch this year?
No.
No.
He did, it feels like forever ago.
It was 22 against ECU, had a touchdown catch. It was amazing.
So
22.
He kind of burst onto the scene. We're like, who's this Erickson?
For one play.
Right?
Yeah.
So BYU needed some help in that room. I was so happy to see
Keanu Hill's out.
A veteran, yes, yeah. Keanu Hill graduating, yeah. A veteran step in and immediately help that room. I don't know how much they're going to be involved. I was speaking recently with Hans Olsen, and he talked about even though the tight ends weren't involved a ton in the pass game, they were really good collectively as a blocking group.
Ray Paulo was one of those guys who blocked a ton. He was on special teams.
The schemes from Kevin Gilbride were outstanding, especially on the blocking front.
Yep.
They were so good protecting Jake Retzlaff and helping out in that arena. Yeah, we want to see the tight end more involved in becoming a pass catcher. I don't know that this
is
player,
Brigham Young, though. You got to catch passes.
I know. Right? I don't know that this player necessarily all of a sudden revamps that whole room. It's like, oh, yeah, well, now they're going to have a 40-catch tight end. I don't think it's going to happen.
But, yeah.
I mean, shoot, I'd like 25 catches from a tight end.
Heck, is 14 too much to ask?
My goodness.
Like one a game?
So I like, and I'm with you. I don't like losing Ice. The linebacker core, if they can keep Jack Kelly and Isaiah Glasker and Harrison Tagger comes back, and then you bring
in Ciala. If you keep those three, you got your starters.
You bring in Ciala Sarah. There's some others that saw some time on the field. But if you lose somebody else along with Ice, then I'm like, I don't like that for the depth.
And just a reminder, rosters used to be, until this year, 120. Starting next year, they're down to 105.
105.
That includes walk-ons.
And everybody's on scholarship.
If you want. A school can choose to do that. The SEC has said, hey, we're going 85 scholars. And then there's revenue sharing, and then there's NIL. Three sort of silos of money.
In some form, everybody will be on, hopefully, scholarship.
On getting paid. Yeah,
yes.
It's not like your expense. Like, if your expenses aren't getting covered in some capacity, that's tough, right? You have some form of money
coming in. BYU, frankly, is great about that, taking care of their players.
Yes, we saw what Bill Barr did a couple years ago and so on and so forth. Yeah. Okay.
Well, we're talking about the portal, and I alluded a little bit to the tight end room needing some help, but that opens up a bigger conversation.
Yesterday, BYU offensive coordinator Aaron Roderick, defensive coordinator Jay Hill, spoke to the media about what they feel their positions of need are in the transfer portal.
You know, we would like to get a little bit more depth at O-line. We like the guys that are returning, but a little more depth there would be good. We're not desperate for it. It's got to be the right guy and the right fit. There's a chance maybe, I think we're addressing our need at tight end. And other than that, I think we're in pretty good shape.
Well, we would take a D lineman if we find the right one. We would take a corner if we get the right one. But they're going to have to be the right guys.
Yeah, for sure the right guys, assumed. What are BYU's top position group needs in the portal right now?
I believe the coach has just answered question.
Check.
Number one for me is defensive line because, Jerem, up front, BYU loses all of their go-to guys. All of them. All four are gone, which is unfortunate, but that was a solid veteran group, and they did a nice job this year for Jay Hill. But how do you replace Tyler Batty and Isaiah Banya and Blake Mangelson and John Nelson?
John Nelson, dude.
My goodness. I mean, that's quite a front. Like, all four gone? So that's not position group need number one in the transfer portal is the defensive line. So Jay Hill said, we'll take a defensive lineman. Can BYU take like three defensive linemen?
I wouldn't mind a few, yeah.
Right? I'm hoping that there is at least two that come in from the portal. It's not a complete overhaul, but I wouldn't complain about three at that position group if they are the right guys. And then at corner, how do you replace Jacob Robinson and Mark Collins?
Those are two good ones. To me, they're two of the best BYU's ever had as a tandem. Like, they're top 10 in BYU history, in my opinion.
The defense just had 20 interceptions this season.
Yeah.
20. That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And Mark Collins and Jacob Robinson were a huge part of that.
Yep. In big games, big moments.
So, yeah.
Both seniors, experienced, good cover guys. Like, they're going to be challenged in this Colorado game, but guess what? I feel confident.
I love it.
I'm excited to watch that.
They are excited about the opportunity to play against some of the best receivers in the entire country.
Come on. They're both going, I get to play against the Heisman Trophy winner and Horn Jr. and all these guys. Come on.
Yes. And LeJounte.
That guy.
Yes. Anyway, Colorado's receivers, all elite. So this is a massive opportunity to put some tape out there for NFL scouts.
Yeah.
The eyeballs on this game, are you kidding me?
You'll need your 40 to be good enough.
So we're excited for Jacob and Mark, but BYU now has a need at the corner position. And there are some notable players, some local, that are in the portal that could potentially end up at BYU. I like BYU.
Wester,
thank you. Yeah. I was going to say Western, and I'm like, I don't think that's right.
Best Western.
Okay. Yeah. But BYU, let's see, they bring back Mo Bamba and... then who else is really proven at the cornerback position after that?
They have some young guys, Trey Alexander, Jonathan Command,
yes,
that they're excited about.
So, again,
Evan Johnson's back.
There are some guys there, but I need depth. I want depth, and I wouldn't love like a veteran, like a grad transfer, kind of like Mark Collins, where you just plug and play, like Eddie Heckard.
Hey, are there more of them Weber State transfers for BYU? Yeah, let's see if that JO pipeline's still there, because some of those Weber State guys have been some of the best guys. The McKenzie brothers are interesting, right? Marcus at DB, Dom at wide receiver. I'm interested to see what their future looks like. It's all gonna be a little different. The year-to-year ability to transfer, and then the trimming of the rosters. It's gonna have an impact on college football. It's gonna be interesting. Mm-hmm. You can't have as big of a roster. And typically those last 15 are your practice squad guys. They're true walk-ons or some preferred walk-ons. They're not as much like the scholarship guys in that situation. But it does trim your roster just a touch. You don't have perhaps as many diamonds in the rough because you're not going as deep. Like, does a Tyler Algier get on the team when it's 105 versus 120? I'm hoping he does, but it raises the question in my mind. It'll be interesting. I agree with you on all those fronts. The coaches know better than we do. Like, yes, O-line, tight end, D-line, cornerback. Like, let me say a position, and would BYU benefit from a grad transfer or a transfer in that position? Quarterback. Don't necessarily need one. Running back. Wouldn't hurt if you had someone that brought in some juice, but BYU likes the likes of L.J. Martin, Nsione Moa, Pukai Ho'unga, Enoch Nawahina, assuming they all stay. They feel like, hey, we saw something from all of you this last year.
Hinkley Rapati.
Should be done, right? He's a senior.
Yeah, I don't know. Does he have a COVID exception? I don't know.
I don't think so. I think he's done.
Are we through that era? Like, are we?
No, because there's missions, right? I bet there's someone out there.
It extends.
Okay, wide receiver. If Chase Roberts leaves, I want a transfer like a Darius Lasser or Keelan Marion that can come in and be one of your top three or four guys. But if Chase stays, do you need a Darius replacement? Or is it just more space for JoJo Phillips, Parker Kingston?
I feel good about the wide receivers.
I feel pretty good, too. Tight end, you need a guy. You got a guy in the portal. Do you need another guy? Maybe. We'll see.
Who's going to play left tackle for BYU this year, Jeremy?
That's a good question. Next year, Isaiah Jetta.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, is Isaiah the next NFL pick at left tackle
that's
for BYU?
He certainly got the
size.
They
believe that he will be.
They hope that he – I think it's who's going to be a right tackle. And in the bowl game, by the way, yeah, that's going to be interesting, what they figure out there. We'll talk about that in a minute.
I like the O-line. Just want some depth. Like, if there's a guy there, Aaron Roderick said it, like, we'll take the right guy. Love Bruce Mitchell and what he could bring. And Waylon Lapuaho is outstanding. Sonny Macassini and Austin Leousa had significant experience.
Right. Yeah.
Like, though,
but
that's
that
a
tackle.
That's a good front there, but you need some depth. And maybe you need a right tackle.
And we say returning. We don't know, you know, who knows? And next season, spring ball happens. Like, any sort of, yep, this guy's coming back. They could say they're coming back right now, but in the spring they could go into the portal. Like, hopefully not, but that's the reality we live in.
This also opens up a different avenue in the transfer portal conversation. And let's remind everyone, BYU felt very good about not having to add a ton of pieces last year because they liked the core
that they brought back. To a 5-7 team, which felt crazy.
Right. But they bought into the core philosophy, a la basketball did when they went to year one of Big 12 play. BYU benefited from what the coaches were excited about. Everybody came back. They learned. They grew together.
If your core is good enough, it works. If they're not good enough, you're going to stink again.
And it worked.
That wasn't the case.
There is more of an immediate need in several of the position groups we just pointed out. So it's not going to be a scenario where BYU can only add like 5-7 players in the portal and be good. The number's going to need to be higher, but you don't want it to be too many because the year before that it was, what, 21?
I had 31 on my.
Oh, 31?
Like total transfers, 31.
Wow. So I thought it was, and I'll have to go back and look at the
specific
number.
That's including JC, that's
right.
Including
I got to go back and look at just guys from Division I to Division I in the portal. But it was over 20, which is a ton of players, and they talked about how difficult that was. And then the 5-7 last year was good. They felt solid. So BYU's somewhere in between that.
And it was probably more than that. It was just who actually played.
How aggressive does BYU need to be in the portal if you want to keep that same family core philosophy together and try and replicate something close to what BYU did this year?
Yeah, well, you're going to have to go 4-2 in one-score games. That's the key. Like, BYU could easily have been 8-4 in the regular season. They weren't because they had some clutch moments. They don't need to be crazy aggressive. I think like a medium amount. I don't know. What is this, cup bop?
Like 12?
1-10, how spicy? I'm like 4. Like, not crazy spicy, but a little bit. Enough to fill your needs. It's need-based. And you have to look behind and go, who's coming back? Who didn't jump in the portal that we feel like could be the guy next year? And you go from there.
Yeah, I'm thinking about impact players. Like, BYU needs an impact player at tight end. They probably need an impact player or two on the offensive line. They probably need two on the defensive line. Probably need one in the defensive backfield.
How proven do they need to be? Because it's tough. Like, well, we want battles at every position. We want this. Certain guys won't come in if they feel like there's someone in that spot already. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh,
like,
yeah.
If you're like, there's a proven starter, why would I? Like, it's going to be hard for BYU to get, like, proven linebackers to transfer in because they look, if BYU brings back all three, they're like, well, am I a starter? It's sort of complicated that way. And do you look behind a guy, like, do you look behind LJ Martin and so on? You go, Pokai Hunga feels like he can compete for some playing time at that 2 or 3, or are they going to be 4 deep and are they all okay with that? You know, it's interesting to figure that out. And how much NIL am I getting?
Is there anybody in the high school signing class that comes in and can play immediately? Because last year BYU had a handful of true freshmen play.
It was pretty nice as backups, which was pretty good on a 10-2 team. It wasn't like BYU was a bad team when they were playing on a lot.
BYU doesn't need a lot of starters. That's what I mean by impact players. Like right now, like you got to go to the portal. You need to start.
You need D-line impact players.
Sprinkle in a few, notably at the defensive line, probably.
And at corner.
2-3, and then a corner put in there. Because, to your point, I love Trey Alexander. I think his development's gotten in Shmev. Evan Johnson has been great. Like, there are some guys, but you probably still need one.
Shmev's one of the weirder nicknames. Because it's like a super inside joke.
Yes.
Shmev. Sorry, what?
Shmevin.
That has nothing
Evan
to do
with Shmevin.
Shmevin. Yeah, exactly. That was a great story. I remember that in the post game, right?
Yes. At Wyoming.
Shmev? What's the origin of Shmevin?
Our question of the day. Which position group is the top priority for BYU in the transfer portal? Your number one priority at APD 222 on X answers defensive line. BYU is losing all of the starters. And they need more depth going into next year.
And Logan Lutui, right, was another senior. So
yes.
Yeah, continue to weigh in. Next, Facebook, Instagram. Offensive coordinator Aaron Roderick told the media yesterday that offensive tackles Braden Keim, Isaiah Jada are not going to be available for the bowl game.
Ugh.
Which they weren't available for the Houston game, just a reminder. Does this concern you?
Yes. It should concern everyone. Those are two notable players. I know the BYU still has Caleb Etienne and Connor Pay and I mean, some guys up front they're going to do some great stuff. And BYU played without those two against Houston.
Yeah.
And it was okay, but this is a different game. What happens if somebody gets hurt?
Mm-hmm.
Then I feel like BYU might be in a little bit of trouble because now you're putting in some relatively brand new experience. So I just hope that front five that has experience can stay healthy. Austin Leiusa was on crutches late in season 2. Is Austin okay for the bowl game? He wasn't mentioned here. I hope so, because BYU is going to need him to join things up front. So there's going to be some shuffling up there. I'm concerned. I just hope that nobody gets hurt on the offensive front in that game, because after that, it's a little dicey.
BYU ran for 189. Yeah. So it's not like they weren't good. In fact, they were pretty good for BYU, right? 189. It's concerning. That's mainly your right tackle spot we're talking about, because Caleb Etienne's in there. So they moved Waylon Lapuahu from guard to tackle. I would imagine they would do the same thing.
He had played that before he came to BYU, so he'd seen a little bit of time.
At Utah State?
Yeah.
Is that where? We'll see what that looks like, and hopefully BYU can establish the run, because Colorado's one of the worst rushing offenses in the country. They move the ball by passing it with Shedeur Sanders in that passing attack. So if BYU can get a lead and control the game a little bit with that O-line, that'd be nice.
Amen to all of that.
By the way, Colorado just got an Alabama transfer in the portal, D-line.
Are we shocked by this at all?
Luckily, he's not playing in this game.
No.
But he's going to play in the game next year.
Colorado's on BYU's schedule next year.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people aren't thinking about that. Like, there will be a rematch of this Alamo Bowl next year between the Cougars and the Buffs.
Yep.
All right, let's keep things rolling.
KBYU basketball with Kevin Young coming up Thursday night, 8:30 Eastern time on the BYU TV app. BYU playing Florida A&M Friday. And then, hey, conference play starts next week.
On New Year's Eve.
Sorry, in 2 weeks.
After the break, former BYU quarterback Riley Nelson on BYU's transfer portal needs. And he takes a look ahead to the Alamo Bowl against Colorado. What has him most juiced about this opportunity for BYU? This is BYUSN.
This segment of BYU Sports Nation presented by BYU Food to Go, the MVP of your next event.
In my opinion, this is without question the most intriguing non-playoff bowl.
I'm really excited about the matchup that we have against Colorado.
Jake Retzlaff has far exceeded all of our expectations.
They've got work to do to rebuild both lines.
Work to do is the phrase, and how much of that will happen in the transfer portal for BYU. We are live in Studio B with your day-to-day BYU Sports play-by-play. I am Spencer Linton, teamed up with Jerem Jordan. Joining us now, a man who took a little hiatus from the show, but we're glad to have
him back, baby.
Former BYU quarterback Riley Nelson is with us. Riley, how are you this fine morning?
Well, you mentioned the hiatus. I think, like, my last appearance was maybe the Utah week. So I, you know, going 2-3 in the last three games is my fault. So I'm going to own that right here up front to you guys and all of Cougar Nation.
Sounds like you have read the book Extreme Ownership, which has some interesting principles in it. We were just talking about the portal and BYU's needs in terms of position groups. What are your thoughts on where BYU needs to explore getting some immediate help?
Yeah, y'all have already talked about it. So here's what's so interesting is this is all with the supposition that there's nobody on the existing roster that is developing to replace some of these key departures. I mean, for example, let's look at the defensive line. It was markedly better. Like, these guys, and think about how many snaps those guys played career-long. Nelson, Mangelson, Batty, these are career-long BYU guys, came into the program, developed, and then they were the ones, you know, culminated in a tremendous season. And now we're talking about replacing them with transfer guys. I don't know. My hope isn't now. The other thing is the nature of the transfer portal era is, like, I lose touch and maybe kind of lose attention just assuming that we're going to replace needs out of the portal. But my hope is that there's guys waiting in the wings in the program currently that are being developed that can replace some of these. But you guys have already touched on them. Defensive lines first. You can always use more depth on the offensive line. That was a comment or a quote coming in from the lead-in. As a quarterback, I would always love more weapons, especially not knowing, you know, Chase Roberts has a decision hanging out there for him. So I would love to go and just pack that wide receiver room with as many weapons as possible. And then, of course, losing the cornerbacks, those cornerbacks being able to man up the team's, you know, best and second best option really, I think, contributed tremendously to a lot of this success that we saw on the defensive side of the football. So probably the only thing I've added to your previous conversation is, man, as many weapons as we can get on the outside, I'd love to have as a former quarterback.
O'Reilly, because you speak from that position of being a former quarterback, you understand what the tight end means at BYU. That said, this year the tight end not nearly as heavily used by the Cougars. So some fans are wondering, okay, well, what is the future of the tight end at BYU? And then you look at the room, and thanks to yesterday, BYU grabs a guy in the portal from the team up north. That helps, but still there's some room there for BYU to add depth. So how do you feel like BYU can further implement the tight end as a weapon in their current offense under Aaron Roderick? And, of course, adding some depth there as well.
You know, guys, I'm going to put the onus on the players. Offensive coordinators and Aaron Roderick specifically, but this entire offensive staff, if you got a bona fide playmaker, you do not – he is involved in the game plan and the scheme. Like, more recently, we saw that with Matt Bushman. We saw that with Isaac Rex in end zone schemes under Jeff Grimes. But I'm going to go all the way back to my era and look at 2008 and 2009. In 2008, Max's primary target was Austin Colley. Dennis Pitta still had a good year, but in no way was he, like, feature or option number
right.
one. So what happened from 08 to 09? Well, Austin goes to the league. Max surveys out there. Who can I trust the most? Who's making the most plays? Who's converting third downs for me? Who's making plays in the red zone? And naturally, Dennis Pitta emerged as the all-time great tight end that he was in 2009. But he had to emerge as that. He had to prove himself to Max, prove himself to Coach Anai, that he was the guy that deserved all those targets, that deserved all of those plays drawn up for him on third down, to become that primary option in the red zone. Like, nobody started off saying – nobody pushed Austin into that role or schemed it up so that Austin was somehow the product of this – or, sorry, that Dennis was somehow the product of the system. Dennis emerged – he took it upon himself to emerge. So – that's kind of my answer to that is we've got all these guys and we're excited about them and their natural ability and their athleticism and they show flashes, but it's on those guys to prove to Jake and to prove to Coach Roderick and to prove to this team that they deserve to be featured in this offense.
Agree to disagree on Dennis, but that's okay. I'm just kidding.
Dennis, we all a system tight end.
Just absolute tool of the system. I'm just kidding.
Because obviously when he went to the league, he didn't do anything
Same thing. So, yeah. Same thing. Joe Flacco. Oh, Super Bowl. I won a Super Bowl. I'm an NCAA career receiving guards in history. Yeah. Blah, blah, blah. I don't want to hear it. Anyways.
Yeah, too funny.
Jake Retzlaff this year. How would you assess his play? And obviously took massive steps forward. And then where's the next step for him?
Yeah, massive step forward, but obviously not a completed project, which is encouraging for him. I know he's gone down and trained under John. I just love John's story so much because obviously he becomes the Mountain West Player of the Year. And I'm going to use that in August. I know he trains under him, but I think John's kind of journey here is we can learn something from it, and that ultimately culminated in him being the Mountain West Player of the Year, leading the team to a conference championship, and getting drafted, one of the first picks of the second round, right? Being one of the top 40 draft picks in the NFL draft and one of the first half dozen quarterbacks off the board. But that was kind of him. Like, it was rough his first kind of year, and granted, he played as a freshman and that, but then his sophomore year was kind of rough, similar to, and it was small sample size for Jake his sophomore year, and then his junior year showed flashes, showed an ability to lead, but like, he wasn't, there were some games, and I've talked about this on your show before, and I kind of steal it from Dan Orlovsky. You can kind of put a quarterback on the scale of, like, did we win in spite of him? Did we win with him? Meaning it didn't really matter who lines up at quarterback, or did we win because of him? And I think we saw most games, like, we won with him. There was a couple games where we won because of him. Kind of hard to say that there were games we won in spite, meaning that he limited his downside, and which I think you look back to his sophomore year and those final four games of last season. And there was probably some of those games, Oklahoma on the goal line, right? Like, man, that's a tough decision that was squarely on his shoulders. Anyway, so let's look at John. Again, I'm pulling guys from my era, guys that I'm familiar with, guys that I can speak to use him as an analogy of today's players, like I just did with the tight end position. So what moves did John take from his junior, where, you know, I was at that TCU game. It was like a 53-55 like shootout, and John was throwing the ball over the field. But then I think that same year, you know, they laid an egg, I think, against New Mexico or Colorado State. I'm getting foggy on the details. That's 20 years ago almost now. But, you know, that's how old I'm getting. But fast forward to John's senior year, and, like, the dude just had complete control and command of the offense. And then the biggest thing, and here's where I'm going to come. He not only grew himself as a player, but he grew with Coach Anai. And that's what I want to see from Jake and Roderick, is that Jake, through this season, you know, wrapping up the season, self-scout going into spring, that he continues to earn Coach Roderick's trust, and they're able to give him more of the keys to the kingdom. Because one of the things I don't see at times with this offense, I felt that between quarterback and coordinator, there was potentially times where it felt like, man, we gotta dial something up. Like, we gotta get the perfect play call and the perfect situation to keep this offense moving down the field. A senior quarterback that has a lot of experience and a lot of snaps under his belt, it kind of takes some pressure off the coordinator, and that they can kind of go out there and be like, hey, I'm going to call our base stuff, and I know there's completion no matter what they run. Zone blitz, man blitz, cover two, cover three. There are answers within, you know, this single play call that we're calling, and to hand it over to the quarterback. So moving more away from feeling like we have to dial everything up in order for the offense to be successful, and more that we got a true signal caller out there that no matter what play call we have, he's going to keep the team moving and positive and find the answers to whatever puzzle the defense puts out in front of him.
Riley Nelson, former BYU quarterback, is on BYU Sports Nation. Okay, let's push it ahead to the Alamo Bowl. Saturday night, December 28th, huge national spotlight in the primetime slot on ABC against the Heisman Trophy winner Travis Hunter, probably the number one quarterback drafted overall, Shedeur Sanders, and all of the star power of Colorado. We're trying to quantify how much this game matters for BYU, Riley, on all of the different fronts. So if I can be so brash as to ask you to quantify that for us, how important is this game for BYU, if it's a win or a loss, and how this impacts the season and everything that's gone on in it?
You're talking to the right guy, because my Twitter feud, now, Cougar Nation, I know, and I don't want this to be a distraction for the game, but my Twitter feud with Joel Klatt is coming to a culmination here. Of course, guys, I'm joking, but I have actually tweeted at him this year, because just week after week, he would not give BYU its due, and it was just so incredibly frustrating. And I made it my weekly assignment to tweet at Joel Klatt. I cannot wait. Now, unfortunately, I was saying until we meet your Buffs in the Big 12 championship game. Obviously, that didn't come to fruition, so I'm so glad that it's happening in the Alamo Bowl. But man, this is a tremendous opportunity. The playoffs are gobbling up everyone's attention, and so I think we're going to continue to see this kind of demarcation between as far as relevancy on the spectrum of bowl games. But man, credit to the Alamo Bowl, and credit to these two universities for accepting the invite to play in this game, because if Dion and the Colorado program sticks to their commitment to put their guys out there, I know that BYU's ready and raring to go, and Kalani and his guys, they're not happy with the way, you know, BYU and I, like a lot of other Cougar fans, lost a lot of money on tickets because of that 87% probability that slipped through our hands to play in the Big 12 championship game, right? And this is a chance to kind of reset that, get that nasty taste of kind of the season coming to an end, not how you'd hope. Get that out of your mouth. Beat a quality team that's being out there, you know, all these first rounders. We got the Heisman Trophy winner, and get a chance to, like, truly kind of cleanse the palate of how the regular season ended, and B, get a signature marked win, get back to 11 wins, you know, for the first time since 2020, and only for so it was 2020. And then the previous one to that, if I'm not mistaken, was all the way back in 2009, like 11 win 10 happens, you know, double digit wins, but But even if you look at the bifurcation between 10 and 3 and 11 and 12 programs, like 11 and 12, there's a lot fewer of those. So they get a chance to, you know, cement their legacy even more within the history books of BYU. I'm rambling now because of how big it is. So, Spencer, to answer your question, like, it is big. It's huge. I'm excited for it. College football fans are excited for it. And can't wait for them to kick that game off.
I'm so glad that you made it your weekly mission to tweet at Joe Klatt. And I hope that doesn't go away in the buildup and hopefully after BYU beats Colorado, Riley.
No one deserves a defeat in the Alamo Bowl more than Joe Klatt for all of the disrespect that he gave to BYU this season. Send it to him. Send this clip to him, BYU Nation. Let's do it.
I love it. Riley, great to talk to you, man. Be well. Merry Christmas.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, fellas.
Riley Nelson on BYU Sports Station. After the break, we'll hear from BYU players and coaches about that opportunity to play against the Heisman Trophy winner, Travis Hunter. Headlines on the way. Is BYU Sports Nation.
Is that ministering?
BYU Sports Nation is presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
Welcome back to Studio B. I am Spencer Linton. He is Jerem Jordan. If only you could hear our conversations during the commercial break.
I said
break.
Something jokingly rude right before we came back.
Let's get to today's headlines.
Number 17. It wasn't about Dennis. It was about Spencer. Number 17, BYU football held practice yesterday in preparation for the Alamo Bowl against number 23, Colorado. Offensive coordinator Aaron Roderick said tackles Braden Keim and Isaiah Jada will not be available in the game, so it's anticipated Waylon Lapuahu will play right tackle.
Hopefully Austin Leausa is back from injury as well. Get healthy. BYU's Keelan Marion named a first-team All-American as a kick return specialist by the Football Writers Association of America. Honors continue to roll in for Marion, who's tied for the FBS lead with two kickoff returns for touchdowns and 12th in average per return at 26.2 yards per return.
And he's top five in celebrations.
Yes, he is.
In his mind. Redshirt sophomore linebacker Isaiah Moa entered the transfer portal yesterday. Moa played into all 12 games for BYU, 16 tackles. BYU also got a commitment from a transfer tight end from Utah. We can't say his name yet due to compliance. Had 10 catches for 113 yards and a touchdown for Utah last year. Had 1 year of eligibility left. He's going to spend it in pro.
Our guy Tyler Allgeier, 12 carries for 43 yards for the Atlanta Falcons in just a gem of a game against the Las Vegas Raiders. So much
boring offense.
15-9 win for the Falcons over the Raiders, who have now lost 10 straight.
Yeah. Former BYU defensive back Eddie Heckard signs with the Saskatchewan Rough Riders of the Canadian Football League yesterday. Greg Rebell rejoices. Heckard played one season at BYU in 2023. 47 tackles, 5 picks, 2 touchdowns.
Delaney Gibb of BYU Women's Basketball named the Big 12 Freshman of the Week for the second time this season.
Baller.
After averaging 20 points and shooting 63% from the field, 55% from 3 in those two BYU victories.
Men's volleyball picked 3rd in the MPSF preseason poll behind UCLA and USC. Last season, BYU went 7-5 in league play, finished 3rd in the league. Cougars start the season in a couple of weeks at Ohio State on January 3rd.
ESPN's Joe Lunardi has BYU and Kevin Young as the second team out of the field in his latest bracketology. Time to freak out? No, it's December 17th.
It's okay.
You know what we should freak out about in a good way? The heptathlete school record holder Ben Barton is in the house.
Ben's in the house.
To tell us how he broke the record while he was sick.
What?
What's he gonna do when he's healthy? This is BYU Sports Nation. Welcome back to BYU Sports Nation. We are live in Studio B, and joining us now is a school record holder in the heptathlon. He is Ben Barton of BYU Men's Track and Field. Ben, welcome to BYU Sports Nation.
Thank you. Good to be here.
All you had to do was break a school record to get on the show.
We have certain requirements, Ben, and you met them. Congratulations. What was that like to do? And we talked about you were sick during that and you set the school record. What in the world?
It was a surreal experience because when I got here, Kevin Nielsen had the record. I had heard all these myths about him, how athletic he was, how he jumped almost 25 feet in the long jump. And just to be, you know, near his name and now above it is just crazy. Just pinching myself.
Did you already have the ceremony? Because that's a big deal, right? On the track where it's like...
We haven't done it yet.
You haven't done it yet? Okay. Yep. It's like these old, like, little planks that you slide into this board that everyone can see.
Yeah, how fast does that happen? You're like, hey, can we do that tomorrow now?
No, they'll do them all at once, like midway through the season or before conference or something.
There's a lot of top tens to kind of put up
Take some time to put them all, you know.
That's cool.
So a lot of people, because they're not super familiar with track and field, often mistake the decathlon for the heptathlon, and there's some confusion there. So, again, if you're explaining to somebody what you do in the heptathlon for the first time, how do you summarize that into like 30 seconds? Because there's so much that goes on there.
it's a funky event. So it's one track event, but within that one track event, you have seven different track events. And then based on how you do, you get a certain score. So it's not based on how you place in comparison to others. It's just X time equals X score.
What's your favorite portion of this seven-part track event?
That's tough. It's probably pole vault, which you wouldn't think because I'm a really bad pole vaulter, but it's the most exciting. I'd never pole vaulted before coming to college, so it's always an adventure. You know, you just grab the pole and
do you not have anxiety
about
that?
That's not how it works. It's not that easy.
Just grab and go.
It's not Wendy's. What are you talking about? That's amazing. Okay, so you go into the weekend, and obviously, like, you want to do your best, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
You're sick. Like, how sick are you going into this? And then you had the meat of your life.
I mean, I was just really exhausted. But, you know, after going through the whole season with Coach Hogan, it was kind of a piece of cake in comparison. Because, like, she destroys us.
She's
in the
a baller.
Season. Like, there's some hard workouts out there. So, honestly, we were really well prepared for that meet. And so I was just on autopilot. And, yeah, but logistically, it was a little challenge because my mind was all foggy and just didn't have the same amount of energy. So I had to tweak the warm-ups and such. And for pole vault, I went to a four-step instead of a seven-step. So logistically, there were some changes.
I knew there was more to the pole vault.
The four-step. You don't just grab it and go.
Exactly. It's on BYU Food to Go.
That's MVP, how you get yourself killed if you just grab it and go.
How'd you do that, though? Like, how'd you get through that emotionally, physically, mentally?
I just tried to stay calm and just focus on executing the couple cues that I had and have fun with it. I wasn't trying to get, like, the biggest score of my life. I was just trying to get a decent mark to start out the season. And after day one, I was still on track to do that, so we just kept going and kept chugging along. And it was a messy process, but we got through it.
So did you surprise yourself when you set the school record? Because, hey, let's just do our best here. Oh, school record.
Not particularly, because I was close. Before then, I was 30 points away from the school record.
So, like, the last event, you're like, oh, I can do this.
We knew that we could get to there. And so it was just kind of a relief to finally get there and get a nice mark in for the start of the year.
So we were not laughing, but amused by you, like, run through at the very end. You're tired. You, like, look like you crashed in the final race there. Were you okay, man?
Yeah, no, I was fine. I was just being a little dramatic. You know, there's so many people cheering and stuff. You got to give a little show, you know?
Lean was impressive, dude. Give a little show. This whole thing's a show. It's great.
Okay, so you realize that you set the school record.
Yeah.
And you're feeling all of the emotions.
It's right here.
And you're feeling all of the things physically.
It's Coach. Get
so
up.
What's going through your mind as you battle the physical difficulty of that and the emotions of winning? What was that moment like for you?
It was just exhausting. I after that, like, I laid on the ground for like 15 minutes or so, and then I just got up, walked over to the high jump mat, and just laid there for another 20 minutes. And then it wasn't really till the next day that I kind of, like, processed what had just happened. But it feels good now, yeah.
That's awesome. Where do you go from here? You try and get a personal best in the next meet?
Yeah, we got another heptathlon in January.
In the Smith Fieldhouse, right?
Smith Fieldhouse.
Nice.
Same place, same situation. And I feel like there's a big gap between where I am right now and where I can be. So it's an exciting future.
What's the culture like for BYU track and field right now? I know cross country bleeds over into that a little bit with their national championships, but how is it overall right now?
They're phenomenal. You know, I more work with the multis, which is, like, you know, the heptathletes, decathletes, those kind of people. And we're just on an upward trajectory right now. We're talking about steeplechase U. We're gonna have decathlete U.
Nice, I like that.
We got some ballers in the room right now. Jaden Ross Kelly, if he was healthy, he probably would have broke the school record too. He's one of my teammates. We got a lot of good guys there. We got probably one of the best freshmen in the country right now, and it's gonna be a good year.
Yeah. That's awesome. I can't wait for it. So when is the meet in January? If people want to come watch.
Do you remember that? Ask my mom. I don't know.
January, second week in January.
I don't know. I just show up and do what I'm told.
9th to the 11th.
9th to the 11th. Yep, that's it.
There we go. Fantastic. Congratulations again.
Yeah.
Like, in all sincerity, that's an amazing accomplishment.
And you're from Michigan. Lions are having a great year.
Oh, it's amazing.
They got a shot here to do something, actually.
Yeah. Super Bowl this year.
Let's go. They're hanging by a thread on defense.
Beat the Bills in the Super Bowl.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. Okay. You're our Motor City guy.
Yes.
With the great motor at BYU. Yeah. Okay.
Nice. See what you
Let's go. Ben, great to have you on the show, man. Let's give you some BYU Sports Nation karma for your next event. To get healthy, if you're not feeling, are you feeling 100% right now?
I'm pretty much.
Let's go.
Yeah.
Okay.
We got a couple weeks. Yeah.
Get healthy, and can't wait to watch what you do next.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks coming in.
All right. After the break, the last time BYU football played Colorado, the Cougars won the game. Did you know that?
It went well.
It was in a bowl game. Top 5 Tuesday features the best plays from BYU's win over the Buffs in the 1988 Freedom Bowl. I guarantee most of you have never seen some of these plays.
I've never seen any of these
plays. This is BYU Sports Nation.
BYU Sports Nation is presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
Welcome back to BYU Sports Nation. Alongside Jerem Jordan, I am Spencer Linton. It is time for Top 5 Tuesday, which features the top 5 plays from BYU's bowl game win against Colorado in 1988 in the Freedom Bowl.
I've never seen these highlights. Number 5. Brian Mitchell apparently had an interception.
I love Brian Mitchell.
BYU up, trailing 14-7. Deep to Brian Mitchell. Picked up.
Let's go.
Over the shoulder. Nice. For the INT. That's number 5.
Number 4. Sean Covey. Yes, the same Covey family that produced the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. He was highly effective here. Yes. Trailing 7-0 in the first quarter, Covey connects with fullback Mike Salido.
Oh, Mike.
Mike was awesome in the Miami game in 1990. 19-yard touchdown pass, tied the game at 7. Covey finished the game 4-for-10 for 39 yards. But that was a good one.
For one tie.
That was a good one.
Number 3, Tim Knight blocks Colorado field goal right before halftime. 33-yard field goal. Tim Knight, get up! Blocks that puppy.
Yeah.
No return. Kept the score 14-7. By the way, Colorado wins a natty 2 years later. They were a good program.
Yes, I know.
Yeah.
Tim Knight. I love the random names that are showing up in this. This is amazing.
Is that Sean Knight's brother?
I don't know. I was just thinking that. We got a Shane Knight. Yeah, we got to find
Shane,
out.
Shane, thank you.
Ty Detmer came into the game at quarterback. Maybe you've heard of him.
Redshirt freshman.
Some random quarterback. Finding Chuck Cutler. This is in relief to start the second half. 14-yard touchdown to tie the game at 14 in the third quarter. Detmer finished the game 11 of 17 for 129 yards and that TD pass.
How much do you think Ty Detmer weighed in this game?
167 pounds.
And the top player from the 1988 Freedom Bowl, BYU's win against Colorado. Scott Peterson, one-handed pick late in the fourth, game tied at 17. Darian Hagan's pack. Pass picked off by Scott Peterson.
Give me that!
One-hander, let's go. What's up with number 5s making great plays at BYU? Kyle Morrell set up the game-winning 35-yard field goal by Jason Chaffetz to give BYU a 20-17 victory.
For the record, Ty Detmer was listed at 175 pounds. So I feel confident about my guess of 167.
By the end of the year, he had 160.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. 175 pounds with his pads on, maybe.
Soaking wet. Crazy.
That's what's incredible.
That was
he
fun to
did
watch.
It. And at his stature, he was incredible.
Right?
Amazing.
That was fun to watch. I'd never seen those highlights.
Ty Detmer, Mighty Mouse, man.
It's a game I've never seen.
Woo! Our question of the day. Which position group is the top priority for BYU in the transfer portal right now at BYU Coug 24_7 on X?
Where are them 167-pound quarterbacks at?
He says, wide receiver, defensive end, defensive line, lots of players leaving at those positions. Need better players at each position with depth. Wide receivers with speed, defensive end and defensive line with more speed and strength. Need elite players and depth to be great.
Sorry, is that?
It's a lot.
Is that all you needed?
That's it?
Nothing more? Okay,
that's
cool.
That's a lot.
That's it?
Simple. Right. I think we asked for one position group. but hey.
That was comprehensive.
All good.
I enjoy the specificity.
Our elite voice of the day, presented by PAX Healthcare Elevated, comes in from Jimmy Chesh on X. What's up, Jimmy? All 4 starters on the defensive line are gone. We pointed this out. Yep. And losing key pieces on the offensive line, reload the trenches first and foremost.
I
think
I
that
agree.
is the answer.
I agree.
This is the way.
This is the way.
Reload the trenches. Mm-hmm. What does Shedeur Sanders call them? Trench babies?
Is that what he calls
them? Yes, offensive linemen.
Nice.
Today's Rise is shout out presented by Mountain America, the official credit union of BYU Athletics.
Well, Eddie Heckard signing with the Saskatchewan Roughriders, which is your third favorite CFL team.
Mm-hmm. Behind the Montreal Alouettes and that other Canadian team.
The Toronto Argonauts.
Yeah, oh yeah, the Argonauts. Our thanks to today's guests, Riley Nelson and Ben Barton.
Sorry, Dennis, you should have played in the CFL.
For Jeremy, I'm Spencer. Shout out to Travis Knight. Go Cougs.